Hello, hello. Welcome to the first podcast of RC Cinema. I'm Chris Hickey, and I'm here with Ryan Fitzgerald.
What's up?
Today, we're going to be basically introducing what we plan to do here on this pod and what we're about and all the films we love and all the films that have inspired us. And basically, we're going to give a brief explanation of what we're going to do in this podcast series and then go on from there. So basically, Ryan and I both have backgrounds in the film, both being in our college and in just life. We've always been surrounded by film and have had the pleasure to be able to experience great films from now and the past and whenever. But at the same time, we both have a very different perspective on the films that we like and the films that we enjoy. For example, I am definitely more into classical films and old films, and Ryan, you're more into...
I would say I'm more into the pop culture movie and maybe niche things as they pertain to like certain genres. Definitely a big like 80s horror, John Carpenter type deal, you know what I mean? But it goes like further than that, but I would say definitely more pop culture type movies, things that are more in the consciousness. Some things you might have to dig for, some things you might not have to dig for. Big guilty pleasure is the Marvel movies. Love them. Not every film critic or film buff or cinephile out there is like huge on them, but I think they have their place and, you know, they do what they do really well and there's a reason for them and, you know, there's a reason why they make money. So, you know, I guess you'll get to know mine and Chris's tastes better.
And to clarify off that some more, what we're going to be doing here for you guys is throughout each episode, we're going to have a movie that I have picked for Ryan to watch and Ryan has picked for me to watch. Typically there'll be movies that we either haven't seen or it's been a while since we've seen them or movies that we choose to revisit. Our goal is to then see what we like, see what we don't like, why we think you guys would like it, why we think you guys wouldn't like it, and what sticked out to us in this. And then also, I think that through this, we hope to expand your horizons on film as we stay in this quarantine due to the COVID-19 issue. And of course, we are both in our homes. Hopefully, when this ends, we will be able to do this together, video chat. But until then, we're going to be doing this from homes, and hopefully we give you guys some good recommendations. Again, you know, we've known each other for about a year. A little background is that we've known each other for about five, six years, I think.
5 years, something like that. Yeah.
We bonded on film very young in our friendship, and you know, we don't always agree on things, and in fact, we've gotten to several heated debates about film, and we've also, you know, been struck with awe over films that we love together and have been able to share that, and we hope we can share that with you guys too and, you know, bring some humor and some fun into this.
We will be poking fun at certain things for sure. What else? We'll definitely be poking fun at things. We might not even sometimes do a film exchange. We might decide to visit a series of movies. We might like do like an episode each for like every Star Wars movie.
I imagine we are gonna go very deep into Star Wars, but
yeah, and I'm sure at some point
in The Dark Knight Rises. Let's get to our movies today. So yesterday in our pre-pod meeting, we discussed our starting movies. For Ryan, I chose the 19 hold on, let me pull it up real quick just to make sure I have it right. But a Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, 1959 film directed by Billy Wilder, who's one of my favorite directors, Some Like It Hot. And it's an older movie, but it's a very funny movie and definitely brings to light a lot of issues that are very, very funny. And Ryan, for me, you picked
I picked Big Trouble in Little China, a Kurt Russell vehicle, if you will. Big John Carpenter classic. You can see Chris laughing right now because I'm hoping that he's laughing at the sheer campiness of this movie. I think it's like an instant classic. I remember watching this with my brother for the first time when I was just starting college. I was probably like 19 or something like that, maybe like 2 years before I met Chris or something, and absolutely loving it. Like great all around, super, as I said, campy, great visual effects, especially for the time. I believe it was in 86. Kurt Russell, a lot of fun in it. This is just a you're going to the movies, popcorn type movie. You know, you're sitting down, you're not trying to get a lot of meaning out of this type of movie. It's just a fun little thrill ride the whole way through, you know. So do you want to start, or do you want to start with your movie that I gave you, or do you want me to start with what I thought of Some Like It Hot? What do you want to start with?
We're on the topic of Big Trouble in Little China. We can we'll start with that. I mean, unless you want to go.
No, I think that's a good segue.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Tell me. Tell me what did you think of the cliffhanger ending?
Well, so you know, Ryan, going into this, I did not have high hopes. This is really kind of outside of the stuff I watch and, you know, enjoy, but, you know, 5 minutes in, I loved it. I thought it was campy. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was also very fantastical and drew, after reading more about John Carpenter himself, it drew from a lot of elements of, you know, films that were made in the 30s and 50s that had this fantastical type of element to it that really interests me. I loved the creation of the body. And let me just preface this. When I watch a movie, and specifically a movie that is so location oriented, like Big Trouble in Little China, I love when the location takes a character of its own. Mm-hmm. Another example of this can be Jewel Dassin's Night in the City, where New York City takes its own character. But in this, I felt that with every turn of the corner that our characters were going through and that we follow with it, we see a new landscape that Chinatown in San Francisco was creating for us. I mean, something that really stuck out to me was this big Chinese gang street brawl in an alley.
Yeah, yeah.
It was about 19 minutes in the film.
Yeah, it's like the I would say it's like the first set piece in the movie, for sure. And you could argue that it's the most exciting. It's not the most remembered. I would say the most remembered moment in the entire movie is probably when the dude like inflates and then explodes, which is like it's horrifying. It's horrifying at a certain to a certain point, because like, think about it, like if I would have seen this when I was like 7 years old, I would have thought that was like the scariest shit ever.
Yeah.
You know? But the standoff in that scene, that was all a set. It wasn't like filmed on location or anything. That which is pretty cool, because the set looks great. It looks great. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like, it's when you get introduced to the three storms and you're really introduced to what like your main like you're kind of getting the idea of what's going on with this movie. What I really like is the dude swinging the butcher knife.
Yeah.
And he's like, and you just see Kurt Russell like, what the hell is going on right now? Where am I? Even the dude sitting next to him is like, I live here. I don't fucking know what's going on.
To play off your point about that element of, we're kind of dragged along as Kurt Russell is into this weird world of, you know, what is going on, and as you said, he's like, what is this? We're like, what is this too? And you know, I found that to be very appealing. It reminded, you know, a film that I love that is similar to this, in this kind of cult classic, you know, late 70s 80s film is The Warriors, and you're traveling. It's similar in the sense that you're traveling through this area, and at any point there's an unexpected turn. You know, things become more unique. And to play off again your point about the set design, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah,
I
mean, so good. The makeup work in this movie is so good. Yeah.
The tunnels they have throughout this layered Chinese gang hideout. I mean,
yeah. Because once they're like down, like in there, you're like, what? Where am I right now? Like, you have no idea where the heck you are.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Exactly. There's like monsters and all this other kind of stuff like going on. And you're like, dude, like, I literally have no idea what's going to happen next in this movie. I literally have zero idea. So, you know.
And another thing I found very interesting was the role of the character. Who is how, number one, all of these characters connect, and that's the role of the character of Wang Chi, Dennis Gunn's character's love interest. Her name was Mao Yin. You know, when Kurt Russell and Dennis Dunn, when Wang Chi and Jack Burton are the characters' names, they go to the airport to pick up this girl. It's a seeming
Airport, how weird is that airport? That is the weirdest. I guess this is coming. Like, was that the way? Did you see? Okay, there's a like specific thing that I noticed with the Chinese gang. Like, so I rewatched it yesterday. I wish I would have gotten through the entire thing because now it is not available on Hulu or HBO Go or anywhere, which is a real bummer. But something that I noticed that like one of the guys in the Chinese gang was wearing these like glasses,
yes,
with slits for eyes, which is like, if somebody wore that in a movie today, they would get in so much trouble. I was like, first off, where'd you get those glasses, dude? Like, where? Second off, this is not okay. I think this goes for both of these movies, too. This movie could never, ever, ever get made today. Ever, ever. I don't even think they could remake it, to be honest with you. I think there would be a lot. Yeah.
And if they didn't remake it, it would be bad. It would be bad. It wouldn't work.
Yeah, it wouldn't. No. Because they're, like, you know, hypothetical, they take Kurt Russell, like you take Kurt Russell's character and you replace it with like who else but like The Rock or like Jason Statham. It's not gonna work with anybody else but Kurt Russell, because Kurt Russell is like the king of this. Like, that's like that Snake from Escape from New York. You can't, like, you know, he's used to playing that guy. He's like, he knows what he's doing when he's playing that guy. He's the best when he's that guy, you know what I mean? Like,
and I just want to circle around back to this point about about this character Miao Yin, the girlfriend. I mean, she's supposed to be the centerpiece of why they're going on this adventure. I mean, the first thing is they're gonna go pick her up from the airport. That's the simple drawing line of what's supposed to happen in this scene. Is they're going to the airport to pick up this girl, and then he's supposed to pay some gambling debt. But then this girl gets kidnapped. And she doesn't have she has one line in the movie. She has one line in the movie, and it's like I can't even remember. It's like a one word, one line. It's so small, but yet it's kind of like in a MacGuffin aspect to it.
Yeah. She becomes what they're fighting for and everything. She becomes
what they're fighting for, but you don't see what it is. I mean, it's the love interest, but she's not she's a character that is the goal, but even the scenes where it's like her interaction with the guys who have kidnapped her. I mean, she's just laying there. She's not doing anything. She's tied up or in some trance or something. And I found that to be very interesting. And a lot of great filmmakers do that with characters. And I found that very fun to find in something campy, comedic.
Like, I mean, the motivation for the bad guy is that like he wants to sacrifice her so that way his life is longer. And it just becomes it becomes a MacGuffin. You know what I mean? They build it and they make you understand why they would take this girl and why this guy. Because I feel like any other thing, like they would have made it like an object, you know, it would have been much different.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it would be completely, and it would be weird. And they do kind of create her. I mean, I don't mean to sound as to say that she is an object, but they objectify her as a woman to be this sort of symbolic reference of youth for this guy who wants to take her and use her for his power of staying, you know, of rejuvenating himself, and for this, for even our, you know, the guy who's trying to rescue her, Wang Chi, she is this symbol of, wow, I got the girl, I have this girl, I've finally done all I need to do to bring this girl to be with me finally, and it's like, nope, nobody, sorry.
Yeah,
not gonna happen.
And you know what the funny thing is too, is that like he's kind of the main character of the movie. Like I think they use Kurt Russell as like your vehicle into the movie. Like we said, like he's completely foreign to what's going on here. But what they really want to show you is Wang. Like he's the character that like he's like fighting people, doing all this cool stuff. He's acting all heroic. I mean, he's the driving force behind it. Like really, if Kurt Russell was just there, he would have been like, all right, like whatever. I don't know that girl. I'm out. You know, we can see from the beginning of the movie that he's like very like I don't know how to describe it, but like. He's just very like devil may care. Like he's kind of like whatever. He's very sarcastic. He's funny.
He has nothing to be attached to. He has nothing to be attached.
Yeah, no, nothing, nothing. There's nothing that he's
great. Which is a great form of character development for this kind of movie, for these adventurous kind of movies.
Yeah,
have this guy who has no care in the world, who really doesn't give a shit about anything. You know, then start to have to develop some sort of. You know, bond with these people, even though he doesn't necessarily want to, and then he does develop the bond, and it's a girl for himself and everything. And I want to now transition into, before we move on to the next film, I want to transition into the campiness about this and talk a little bit about this 80s campiness, you know, horror comedy infusion. I mean, I thought that it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I thought Carpenter. Yeah, the thing is that Carpenter does this the best. Like he's the one who knows how to do this the best. Like any other person trying to emulate this, like the only way I can think of, like somebody doing kind of the same thing, is the movie that I'm gonna recommend to you the next time. Evil Dead, like it has very similar aspects to the way it feels, you know what I mean? It has like a different that feel, you know, like an 80s movie does. Like it's hard to describe like a good 80s movie feel, you know. You can't achieve it now, especially with like digital and everything like that, like people filming it. Like you would never get that feel from digital. You couldn't, because you know, I don't know, it just has this feel. But like, tell me what you thought about it. Tell me what you thought about it.
I mean, I thought it was I think you hit the head on the nail. I mean, I thought it was you know, very, it had the feel to it. It had the feel that I feel like I needed with these kind of movies, the same way I feel with The Warriors or something like that. And look, I am no expert on, you know, 80s campy movies. I mean, of course, you know, you have the more horror 80s movies like Halloween and Jason, and those I'm very familiar with. And even those, you still have that 80s film. And for us, I think now that we are, you know, young and we live in a generation that is completely separated from that, that, you know, away from media, away from...
Yeah. You know, yeah. Any kid our age has sought those movies out. They've looked for it. They didn't grow up with it out. It wasn't like out when, or it wasn't like on HBO or anything like that. It's not like, and they weren't all like, people our age aren't relying on, or not even our age, but like younger, like, aren't relying on the television to show them things. They get a pop-up and they get shown like, this is what's on. And it's like, okay, I'll pick that. And you know, most things are going to be like very like thought through the like Netflix movies and everything like that are going to be completely different.
It's a fun movie reminiscent of a time that is post-70s, post the Lucas, Spielberg, Scorsese, Coppola feel that they're like, oh, we don't want to be in this big production company cinema. We want to have independent cinema. And this is the child of that idea, of the idea that you don't need to be part of a big studio to make a movie.
Yeah.
And it's a sillier version than anything like Scorsese or Spielberg or Lucas or anything like that. But it has that feel of, this is not a studio film. This is a film made on a low budget. I mean, it was a budget of $20 million and it only grossed $11 million in the box office.
Yeah.
And to go off your point back to what you said about if they got Dwayne The Rock Johnson, for example, to come in, it's funny that you say that because in June 2015, Dwayne Johnson had a good idea to develop this movie into a remake and him be Jack Burton. And it seems that
it never got anywhere.
He wanted to involve John Carpenter, but it didn't seem like John Carpenter really wanted to do it at all.
No, because the thing is like Kurt Russell is a different type of like action hero. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's a much different type of action hero. It's hard to tell who, like, it's not that I wouldn't watch that movie. I feel like Dwayne The Rock Johnson could be a lot of fun in a movie like that. But I just don't feel that he has the right feel for the type of guy that should be in that role. You know what I mean? Like he just shouldn't be in that role. He's an over the top, you know, he's an over the top action hero. Like you need like the Fast movies that's where his bread and butter is. That's where I want him. You know, I don't need him in this, like, or like Escape from Witch Mountain or those Jumanji movies or anything like that. Like, that's where he should stay. Keep that's what he does well. Big stupid roles, movie. Yeah.
Those, they're fine. Now, before we move on to what I don't like about it, and then we move on to you. I really enjoyed it. The one thing I would say that I didn't like at times, and this is because, and you will see this, you guys will see this as we go on with this podcast, I am very, very, very adamant on good writing in a screenplay. And I felt that at times, but before I say this, I felt that in the beginning, the screenplay was it wasn't that good. I didn't buy what they were saying. But then as it grew and it played on more, I thought it got way better. I thought at the beginning of the movie, I thought the screen, the lines were, they were kind of cringy. But then as it built and built and built, I thought it got a lot better. And
you appreciate what's going on in the beginning of the movie a lot better, right?
Exactly.
Because the first things that you hear him say are over the radio, and he's very like, you know, like he's like dicking around and everything like that, you know. And, so like,
to play off that point too, and I found this very interesting. You're constantly moving in this movie. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah, it's forward. It's forward action. If you're not moving in this movie, you're dead.
It doesn't stop. And then even at the end, what is he doing in the last scene? He's on the move again. He's back in his truck. Where's he next? Which leaves you, and you say cliffhanger, at another cliffhanger of what's he going to do next? What is Jack Burton going to do next?
Yeah.
For himself. And I also want to touch on the character of Jack Burton. I mean, he's this typical 80s macho guy, but yet, and normally that would, you know, especially now in our generation, that would be construed as someone who is pretty intolerant. So now the big reveal, we're going to be doing this. We both like this app that we have on our phone. We highly recommend it for anyone, but specifically people that really like film to get. It's called Letterboxd.
It's pretty popular, but I mean, but, definitely get Letterboxd, free app. And we'll definitely, every single time we recommend a movie, we'll ask each other what our score was on the Letterboxd, and we'll get each other's scores, and we'll see what's up. So what did you rate it? My rating was a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I gave it a 4 out of 5 as well. I mean,
we're in agreement. That's not going to always happen.
No, that's not going to always happen.
Not always going to happen.
And most of the time, it won't happen.
Yeah, most of the time, it won't. This is definitely going to be a super rare occurrence the first time.
But I gave it a 4. And I gave it a 4 because for what it is, for the genre it is, and for what it does, I very much enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I very much enjoyed it. So that's a 4 stars for me on my Letterboxd. Now let's go segue into Something like that. The movie. I just want to give some backstory on it as well. It's 1959, Marilyn Monroe, black and white, Tony Curtis, great actor.
Jack Although, can you watch this in color? I'm just wondering. There must be a colorized version.
But you know
me. But I honestly, I prefer, I'm going to say that I much prefer the black and white version. It was great. Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of my favorite older comedies. You know, it's a funny movie. It's engaging. It's just, it's fun. It's fun. And I think they're all great. I love Jack Lemmon. And I love Billy Wilder, who's one of my, as I said before, one of my favorite directors. But what did you think about it, Ryan?
First off, this movie could never fucking get me. This movie could never get me today, ever. White Chicks was made, what, like 20 years ago or something like that? And has a similar, like, kind of situation, you know? And it's very funny because the rich millionaire guy is kind of what Terry Crews' character is in that movie, right? Where he's like chasing after him. I love the ending. The ending was probably the funniest part of the entire movie. They saved the biggest laugh, which is so good. They saved the biggest laugh in the entire movie for last, which was great. You'll definitely, when people saw this in the theater, they left the movie like dying laughing and like having like, oh, that was so good. I loved it, you know? So like I said, that's so great. So if you look back, you know, it's really funny because this takes place in during Prohibition, correct? So it's really funny when Marilyn Monroe is like dancing, and so now that I mention that, all her parts where she was singing and dancing and they like make her like the center of it, she was good. She was really good. I didn't dislike that. I really didn't dislike that at all. I thought it was really smart to like put, because the movie is about a girl's band, you know, there's a part of it that's about that. So what the movie is about is about two band members from Chicago. They get into a little bit of hot water when they walk into a garage after like basically stealing a woman's car from her, basically, because he's like, come on baby, give me your car, and like, and then she's like, my car, and then just gives him her car, which is like, what the hell. And then, which I would love this if I was at a garage and they can just fill my car up with gas and then they said like 50 cents. He probably got like 5 gallons of gas from that. Just saying, that would be amazing. So then the mobsters like come in and they kill all these dudes that are playing in a card game. They come in, they kill those guys, and then they kill the gas attendant guy. And then they're trying to walk out. The one thing that I can say is that these guys have terrible timing. They're the worst with timing. All the problems in this movie are caused because these guys have the worst timing of anybody in the like that has ever like, you know, it's so funny because they're like, oh, they're still here when they just shot those guys. Let's walk out. They're still there. And they turn, they see them. And then one guy tries to like call the police, but then they see that guy and then they shoot him. And they turn, shoot him. And the guys run out. And before they had learned about a girls band going to Florida, and they go to the girls band in Florida. And they dress up as women, and then that, you know, sets the plot in motion. And a lot of the movie, they ignore the fact that they're running away from the gangsters until the very end of the movie. And that's actually a problem I had with it, because they don't really, you know, build toward that. They just kind of like the bad guys just kind of show up at the end. And they're like, and the bad guys wind up being like underlings to a worse bad guy, you know? And I kind of love the gangsters in this too, because they're not very realistic at all. I like his one sidekick guy though.
Yeah.
The one with like the very stony face. I don't know what his name is, but he was good. He was really good in his role in this.
And I love that it's played during Prohibition. I love that these two guys, like you said, they're kind of the worst at having their, they just have the worst timing. Every situation that happens to them, they end up in some scenario that could not be the scenario they want to end up in. But they're always so silly about it. They're always so fun about it. You know, and they're always just in pursuit of Marilyn Monroe. They want Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, they both do. They both do, but the other guy,
one of them dresses up as a woman. You know, and you know, it's another kind of fun adventure that we see these like two kind of like putzes just going around.
Yeah, literally, they're both putzes.
This girl that's
they're
way both... out of their league.
Yeah. so out of their league. Because, you know, watching this, I realized, like, wow, Marilyn Monroe was really, like, she was something back then, you know what I mean? She's a looker, for sure. But, you know, like, it's really funny to see these two, like, nitwits, basically, try to like they're like pining after her, you know. What I thought was funny was like a lot of things like show how like dated some parts of this movie are, like when she goes into the bathroom and she's like hitting an ice block with an ice pick and she's breaking up ice with like, and there's these giant fucking ice cubes, which is like ridiculous. And you're like, oh my God, like that's how they used to have to, like, crush ice. I can just go to my refrigerator now and get ice. How amazing would they find that to be? You know, like there's just some things that date the movie a little bit, which is part of why like I didn't rate it quite as high. So I love the pacing of it. It's good. Let me think. What else do I really like? The dialogue is just so witty. You know, it's a lot of fun. There's not really like a really dull moment in the film. Every single thing has some type of motivate, like every single scene has some type of thing going on for it. What I would say the standout like scene in it is when they're cutting back and forth between the two dates. The date on the boat and then the date at the dance. So the Tony Curtis character is like making out with Marilyn Monroe, and then they cut to the other character and he's like dancing with the old man and they're like biting the rose. That's so funny. I thought that was so great. I thought that was like one of the best parts of the entire movie. I was like, oh my God, this is so funny. Like this guy is like, please get me out of here, please. I'm doing like, he's ultimate bro. Yeah. And then at the end of the movie, he tells the old man like, eh. He's like, oh, I'm a man. He's like, it's fun.
Yeah, very funny. Great. I love that movie and absolutely hilarious. I mean, yeah, you would have trouble making that now. Having a man, you know, dress in drag like this and, you know, pretend to be a woman would definitely offend some people. And
we
have a movie that we can look back on it now and appreciate it. I don't think it's so out of it that it would be that offensive, but I think definitely in the process of writing a character like that, it would definitely not
be. You'd have to have more nuance to it now. Like, you definitely, because there's not, like, if you're looking for a politically correct movie, look elsewhere. Do not look at this movie. Don't go anywhere near this movie, actually. One thing I noticed is that they call women dames, like, there's no point.
It's that 50 slapstick, you know, that kind of, hey, buddy, hey, fella, how you doing?
There's this one point when, like, they see them running, and then the guys go, that's no dame. And I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And it's like and what also is really bad and like what dates this movie a lot is like they don't portray women well at all. No. Like at all. Like it's not, but this movie is not for that. This is not a movie that is, you know.
This is not a movie that is supposed to be looked at with the eyes of political correctness. This is a movie that was made in 1959. There's a lot of things different, but for its time, it was quite advanced in the material.
I mean, you could not see that in most movies
in the 50s. And yeah, 60s.
This was made in 59, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what I look at. I'm like, wow, they made a movie about two men cross-dressing as women in order to get out of a, like, and what's funny now is that if you tried to make that now, somebody would be like, what? Oh, that's funny. Like, what, men dressing as women? It's like, well, for the time, yeah, that's really funny. I still think that's pretty funny because they're like very, they try to be like very macho guys all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. But they're very obviously not, you know, and it's just this, it's this nice kind of, it's fun, it's a lot of fun, man.
An interesting thing about that movie is actually when it came out in 1959, it did not have the approval of the Motion Picture Production Code because it had ideas of homosexuality and it included cross-dressing. And you know, they, in the movie picture code back then, they did not want that. They did not want those topics to be discussed, and they found them to be inappropriate. And you know, you have to hand it to them to be able to. This is innovative for something to come out on in the 50s and 60s because nobody was making that. And yes, no. While it is a joke, and it holds comedy to it, it is very much pushing the paper for the time, and I really enjoyed it. So what did you rate it? What was your rating on it?
I gave this a 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. Good.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. I like I said, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun for what it was. You know, there's movies that, you know, are around the same time that I enjoy more that are much different. It's I don't know. I guess what took away from it for me is like they didn't focus enough on the bad guys. I feel like there might be some deleted, like some stuff that they filmed with the bad guys, kind of like, you know, because they weren't bad. I wish I would have gotten more of them. You know what I mean? It just kind of like they come out and they kill the guy like at the end of the movie and you're like, what's going on? Like, this guy's dead now. And then I love when the FBI agent like walks in and they're like, what, do you want to make a federal case out of it? And he's like, yeah, I do want to make a federal case out of it. I'm an FBI agent. Like,
yeah, it's very, very, very funny. And as you guys will listen to us and hear us talk, you know, a 4 out of 5 for us is not an easy rating. I mean, we are
not at all.
And you know,
I would say our rating system goes like anything below a 3 is not good. It's not good. 2.5 means like it's a movie. I watched it. I didn't like. Absolutely,
it's a movie I watched, and I wasn't, you know, I didn't feel like I wasted my time watching it, but I didn't feel like I gained anything from it.
Yeah,
I felt that it was quite enjoyable. A 3 is,
three to me can mean like there's one or two scenes that I like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. then I'm like, oh, that, or if I go, oh, that was fun, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. if I walk out going, oh, I, you know, I had fun watching that's that. 3.5 means like there's probably a little bit more there. There's probably a couple more scenes that I like. 4 means I really like the movie. 4.5 is like we're getting into like award territory. And 5 is like, I thought that this is like a perfect movie. And it might not be a perfect movie for you, but it's like a perfect movie for me, mm-hmm. you know? Like, and you know, sometimes things like that can,
and I mean, again, there's also the sentimental value that films play with anyone, not just us, but anyone, and that definitely change your perspective. I would say for me, yeah, it's similar. I would say like a 3 is, it was fine. It was there were scenes I liked, there were scenes I didn't like. A 3.5 is, you know, it was good, but I still found some stuff missing. A 4 was, it was good, borderline. You know, it was good. It was good enough. Yeah. But you know, if you guys have if I've seen these movies and you have your opinions, please, we'd love to hear them. You know.
Yeah, I'd like to read other people's opinions of it. Like to
hear your opinions about these films, and if you have any recommendations of films we should give each other, you can you know, definitely shoot those out to us. We would love to hear them as well. Once again, these films were 1959, Some Like It Hot. That was my recommendation for Ryan. And Ryan's recommendation for me was 1986, John Carpenter, Big Trouble in Little China. So now this, and that is the next films we will be recommending for each other and why. Ryan, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Okay, so mine, we're going to stay in the same kind of vein of the Big Trouble in Little China. I mentioned it before. But we're going to go with the Sam Raimi Evil Dead, the original. There's a lot of things that we can get into with this movie. I think that I can probably tell you a couple things once we're podcasting about it and we talk about it. That there's probably, so I'm going to give you Evil Dead, the Sam Raimi movie. There's definitely, this is really interesting. There's three of these
1981,
movies.
Right? 1981.
I believe so. It's an early 80s movie made on like a shoestring budget. Mm-hmm. Stephen King loves this movie. And yeah, I think that we're in the same kind of vein here. I think people can kind of see what my avenue is here. And Chris, why don't you give me my movie?
Yeah, for you, I'm going a little modern. I'm going to a director you like a lot, and I like him too, but not as much as you do. And that's David Fincher. And that's The Social Network. Now, for me, this movie is not a movie that I would consider a 5-star movie. If it's a 4-star, it's just at the top. Cusp of a 4-star, and because I appreciate the material for it, but that's my opinion. But I think you will enjoy it. It's the 2010 movie about the starting of Facebook with Jesse Eisenberg and Andrew Garfield and Justin Timberlake's in it. And
which is weird. This is when this is around the same time that like Justin Timberlake was in, like, he starred in another one where they had like the clock in their arm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, what was that? In Time or something?
In Time. I think that was what it was called. Yeah. I think that was what it was called. I never saw it. I know
this is when Justin Timberlake was really trying to, you know, go into acting. But
this movie, okay in this. He's okay in this.
The budget, $40 million. Box office to $224 million. You know, it's a good movie. It's a fine movie. It's a movie that you should see because it talks about one of the most powerful people
in the world right now.
And this is a Zuckerberg. Yeah. This is a Zuckerberg before all the stuff of Zuckerberg is now. How we view Zuckerberg now as this media mogul. This is Zuckerberg. This came out when Facebook was the biggest thing, but he was still a kid. This is not adult 40-year-old lizard person Zuckerberg. This is late 20s, early 30s, not a lizard person yet, but might be. and the story is talking, and that's just the perspective of how we viewed Zuckerberg at the time of this release, because I remember when this came out.
I do too. I was in high school when this came out.
Exactly. And this talks about Zuckerberg when he was just, you know, a college student. So it's a very interesting tale. I mean, it can carry... Now, I don't want to offend film people here, and I don't think it is like Citizen Kane as a film, but it carries a similar story, as in the story of someone who, I mean, Citizen Kane is about Hearst, right? It's about Hearst, William Randolph Hearst, who was one of the biggest media moguls when he was, you know, his rise to power and everything. And this is very much similar in that it is the showing the rise of someone who is now one of the most biggest people, one of the most known, most powerful.
Very powerful, yeah. Very powerful people. You know, that makes me want to.
He was young when he was developing, and it's very interesting. As a film, it's in my opinion, But I look forward to hearing what you have to say about it. But
yeah, I think this is a movie that I have seen. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna this like we said, these are going to be movies that we haven't yet, that maybe we haven't seen in a long time. Like, I probably haven't watched this movie in, I don't know, probably like 6-7 years, something like that. I've definitely caught bits and pieces of it, but never watched it like the full way through again. I do really like this movie. I think it's very good. And I know what you're saying with the, like, I love me some Mindhunter. That's another Fincher thing. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. That's Fincher stuff. And, you know, he has a feel to his movies that's very different from the way most people do things. You saying that makes me want to go back and watch Citizen Kane when I watch this. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think we should know Evil Dead is obviously a, like early Sam Raimi. This is when he's like getting his start and everything like that. I think this, if I'm not mistaken, I think this went to Cannes back in the 80s. If I'm not mistaken, it didn't win anything at Cannes, but I'm pretty sure it went to Cannes. And, you know, it was really spearheaded by Stephen King seeing it and really liking it. It really helped things, you know, move along for this movie, for such a popular writer at the time to, you know, see it. To put it lightly, this is like a movie that made me want to make movies because I saw how silly and fun a movie can be. And I said to myself, wow, like, people, you can make that. You can, like, this is a thing that exists. You know, this movie definitely has a lot, like, very sentimental value to me because it introduced me to, like the John Carpenter, The Thing, and all that type of stuff. Because after I watched this, I was like, get me into, like, I want to watch all this stuff, you know? Great horror movie. It's all about like the shock horror in this. Things pick up pretty fast.
Yeah.
I'm excited. See a lot of women screaming.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny. I've seen the second one, and of course, you know, the book series, you know, this is a popular series, the toys, everything. I mean, it Big Trouble.
There's a TV show. There's a TV show.
And there's a remake of it.
The remake is pretty good.
Yeah. Ash versus the Evil Dead, which is on Showtime. I don't know if it's still running. I've never really
watched it. I don't think it is. It's on Netflix. It's on Netflix.
1982 about Cannes. It got screened at the 1982 Cannes Film Festival. It wasn't nominated, though, for anything.
But still, to make it into that film festival says something.
Is very interesting. And it's a horror. It's an 80s, you know, it's going to be that 80s campy comedy, you know, horror aspect to it that I'm excited to look forward to, you know, to seeing. As I've seen the second one, but... Yeah, so I'm interested in it, and it'll be exciting. Now, let's move forward to what we want to tell you guys a little bit about what our goals are for this pod, and what we hope to be able to do as we continue this. Obviously, this is our first one, we hope you've enjoyed it so far. But just exchanging movies is not the only thing we want to be doing here. We definitely want to be doing a lot of other things, as we mentioned at the beginning. And I just want to say something about this. We're going to be doing in-depth analysis of movies that we love, you know, whether it's, you know, going into each Star Wars movies and just, you know, talking. I mean, we both are huge Star Wars guys. And we're not going to just be doing like these popular kind of action adventure movies. I mean, I'm a big classic film guy. I'm going to make this kid watch a million 1940s, 50s black and white films, a million foreign films.
I have a feeling that the Social Network is probably going to be one of the very few movies in color that I get to watch.
About that. You are absolutely right about that. And you know, we're interested to hear ideas from you guys, hear what you guys want us to do. We want to immerse ourselves and all of you guys into everything and anything film. And we hope we can gain more intelligence on film than we already have. And we hope
yeah.
we expand your library into movies that you would not normally watch and give you some fun while at it. And Ryan, if you want to add some stuff, go right ahead.
I mean, things that I want to do is like maybe like analysis of like trilogies. Maybe we can do things where we just talk about one certain movie. You know, I mean, I'm sure that we could probably do so much time on just like the Christopher Nolan Batman series, but that's such like a cliche like thing that like people, like men our age, have watched. But like, I feel like we can talk about it a lot. What else could we do? I mean, there's a lot of things.
We love Christopher Nolan Batman. So you know, listen, I'm not an Ryan likes the Marvel stuff. I don't. It's not my thing. I watch him because
I love that shit.
I watch him because I have to watch him. But it's not my thing. It's not what I look at. But I love the Christopher Nolan Batmans. Oh my God, they are one of my favorite hero movies. Maybe they might even be my favorite superhero movies.
By all measures, critically, those are the best. Superhero movies critically, I would say, like, if you're gonna look at a way to make one, you would look toward those movies to show people like this is what it is, this is what this genre is all about, because this is like a completely different genre of action movies, because they have a very specific, you know.
Also director retrospectives, I'm sure we want to do a Scorsese one.
Yeah,
Nolan one.
We'll do a Tarantino one for Tarantino sure, because I'm sure that we've both Tarantino, seen every single Tarantino movie, Tarantino, which isn't hard to
Tarantino,
do.
Tarantino. Everybody loves Tarantino. He just rips off everybody, but whatever. You know, a Coppola one. I mean, we want to be able to bring all the content we can about film. And foreign to everything. I mean, Ryan knows this, but I love foreign films. And you know, I think we want to also do like retrospectives even on trilogies themselves. What are the best trilogies? Why? Are they necessarily the trilogies that are popular, like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings? Or are they some like the Three Colors trilogy by Krzysztof Kieslowski, the great Polish director? Or something, you know,
the Dollars trilogy.
Exactly, the Dollars trilogy, the Sergio Leone classic Western. And of course, we're going to be doing genres as well. We definitely want to take deep dives into genres like film noir,
westerns,
German expressionism, all these avenues we're going to be traveling down. And we're excited and hopeful you'll join us on these experiences. And other than that, thank you again for tuning in to
Arts and Cinema.
I'm Chris. That's Ryan.
I'm Ryan.
Yeah. Thanks again, and we will see you soon with the next episode. Bye.